Vanakkam and welcome to the History of South India, Episode 1, The Early Sources. Today, we will talk about the earliest sources of record, tales and from legends and myths, and what we can draw from it. South India, unless otherwise stated, take this to be the broad geographical region we know of today, has had continuous civilization and a history that goes back to the Paleolithic era. The Paleolithic era is a period in human history distinguished by the original development of stone tools that cover about 95% of human prehistory. However, we needn't concern ourselves with this in this show because, well, this is prehistory and the show is about the history of South India. So we will, just like that, skip some 3.3 million years of history and come right down to the Iron Age, which is when South India starts to emerge slowly from the mists of time and into our focus. The earliest sources would be the Puranas and the great epics. Legends account for the migration of Aryans into South India. One such legend is the migration of sage Agastya, who is said to have crossed the Vindhyas, and well, he ordered it to stop growing till he returned back to the north. But instead, the sneaky sage that he was, he settled down in the south and thus preventing the Vindhyas from growing. Pity, really, as otherwise, imagine a mountain range as tall as the Himalayas in the south of India. Chennai's weather might actually be slightly more tolerable. The Mahabharata and Ramayana also make clear mention to many familiar names and tribes and kingdoms in the south. More on that in just a minute. But we must bear in mind that these stories can only be interpreted as variations from the truth, from reality, as there is not too much evidence that they provide. As to when this migration might have happened, we really don't know. Mr. Sastri, who is the only serious historian to put a period to this, and he puts it around 1000 BC. But then he really doesn't give too much evidence to support it. So, well, his guess is as good as mine. The first real historical reference, though, made on South India outside of legends is by a Greek ambassador named Megasthenes. He was the ambassador of the Greeks to the court of Chandragupta Maurya, and around 400 BCE, we get the first real details of South India. He speaks of a great kingdom in the south ruled by one Pandya. I'm purposely pronouncing it that way, as this is not the Pandyans, but it is instead the daughter of Hercules. Well, is this a reference to the Pandyans, though? Possibly. Then the historical references start to flow. We next have the Arthashastra, written by Kautilya, that talks of the geography of the area, which we already covered in the previous episode. And then he mentions the Pandyan and Chera Nadus by name, speaks of the trade, which is pearls from Pandya Nadu, cotton textiles from Madurai, etc., etc., etc. More tangible evidence starts to flow. We then have the 2nd and 13th rock edicts of Ashoka, in which we first hear of the Chola, Kerala Nadu, and Tambapani in Sri Lanka. Ashoka talks of how he arranged medical treatment for these lands, built highways, dug wells, and, well, put up traveler lodgings along these imperial highways. The same things that you read in 6th standard history, I guess. It also talks of conquest by virtue, aka Dhamma Vijaya, as opposed to conquest by blood and iron. However, we do know for certain that the Mauryan armies never reached this far down south, so these regions were never conquered, nor were they even vassal states. My guess, though, is given the size and the power of the Mauryans, it is possible that these tiny kingdoms simply sat out any wars with their superpower to the north and adopted friendship and peace as a way of dealing with it. Mauryan rule definitely did reach into northern Karnataka and parts of northern Andhra. We know that these regions were governed by viceroys, along with Kalinga, yes, the Kalinga. From the southern sources, we in turn know that the ancient Tamils had knowledge of the Mauryan Empire, as Sangamira poems specifically talk of Pataliputra or Patna and how the Mauryan emperors buried treasures under the Ganga waters. Now, why did the Mauryan Empire reach south? Well, Dama Vijaya notwithstanding, we know that the extraction of mineral wealth, iron, gold, silver, the peninsula had started way back 300-400 years prior to the Mauryan period, which is around the time of the Nandas. And it was this wealth that must have attracted the Mauryans. This is also when, interestingly, the sources mentioned first talk about extensive trade networks forming both within the south as well as north-south and between South India and Southeast Asia. Trade links that would thrive for another 1,000 years. Moving on to the epics, I think it is important that we spend a couple of minutes talking about the epics. South India, both Dakshina and Madhya, have found a mention in our epics, as already mentioned. And while we do not have clear information and it is obscured by the fog of time, we know broadly that the Andhras, Cheras, Pandyas, Cholas existed and even played a part in the wars of the Mahabharata. Now, I am not stepping foot into the minefield of, is the Mahabharata real? I'm not going to comment on that. I am only talking about what is written about the Mahabharata. The Mahabharata also makes mention of the Dravidas. And again, I am not stepping foot into the political debate around this expression. No, sir, I am not. We really don't even know who they were. Were they a tribe? Did they denote all of South India? Were they a ruling kingdom? We just don't know. If we do fast forward some 2,500 years into 700 AD, Adi Shankaracharya referred to himself as Dravida Shishu, which could mean offspring of the south. The word itself could be a shorter version of Dravya, water, and Vidu, place of meeting in Sanskrit. So there you go, meeting place of the three oceans. But is this for certain? Nope, I don't know, and I'm not going to comment on that. This is way outside my pay grade. Moving back to the epics, dig further, and a lot of names that would be very familiar to us emerge from the fog of time. Keralas, the Karnatakas, Pashandas and Talavanas. Yeah, sure. You recognize some and some are unknown to us. I do trust you recognize Kerala and Karnataka from that, didn't you? Good. But don't equate it to the modern states of Kerala or Karnataka, as they are categorically not the same. Or maybe they were, we just don't know. Your guess is as good as mine. Before we move on from the epics and close today's discussion, it would be fun to look at who supported the Pandavas and the Kauravas, you know, just for fun. The Cholas and the Pandyas and the Keralas fought on the sides of the evil, aka the Pandavas, the forces of good, or did I? I mean, the grey areas of the Mahabharata are the topic of an entirely separate podcast, so let's leave the good and bad aside. Anyway, these guys fought with the Pandavas, while the Dravidas and the Andhras supported the Kauravas. The Ramayana gives us a slightly more composite and complete picture, as a large portion of it was actually set in South India, and that extension of South India, Sri Lanka, who will be weaving in and out of our tale for the next however many ever episodes this podcast is going to cover, because Sri Lanka is South India as far as we are concerned, given the influence and the interplay between various empires goes. So, yeah, Sri Lanka is a part of India. Forgive me, Sri Lankans, if you're listening. I don't mean to step on your toes, but this is historical fact. While all this might seem very mythical, as already stated, well, we can definitely glean information that gives us a more composite picture of the South during the earlier periods. For instance, the Mahabharata tells us that when Sahadeva conquered this region, he harvested a rich bounty of gems, incense, sandalwood, and spices. Now just go back a couple of seconds ago, and you will remember the bit where Kautilya speaks about, well, gems from the same period, from the same region. As you can imagine, these were the commodities that were indeed what the South traded extensively on, and we know this also from later periods in history. Drill down further, and the Mahabharata tells us that during Yudhishthira's ascension to the throne and the Rajasuya Yajna, it tells us that the Pandyas and Cholas gifted him sandal, again, gems and gold, while the Sinhalas, Andhras and Dravidas gave him costly clothes and gorgeous women. And the Keralas got him, well, war elephants. We now again know that the Chola king who supported the Pandavas was named Sangra Chola, and he ruled from a city called Kansi, or Kanchi, possibly. The Chola country is described as having bordered the coast till Pudukkottai, where the Pandyas took over, but its stronghold was the Kaveri Delta. Now, superimpose this on a modern map and with information from known historical sources, and you will see that it matches up to pretty much how the Chola and Pandya kingdoms aligned, till, well, one or the other defeated the other and painted the map with colors of their own, like it was some video game. Even the Dandakar tribes and the region gets a mention, mind you. You remember the Dandakar forest from episode 0, don't you? And the epics describe them as a forest extending into the southern peninsula from modern-day Odisha to terminating possibly somewhere near modern-day Nasik. As you can see, each of the key regions are described pretty accurately and surprisingly tie into a modern map very well. So the ancients must have definitely had pitching cartographers, I guess. That brings us to an end of the sources, and broadly speaking, we've covered two different sources so far. One are rock edicts, and two is literature, which is mostly poems and epics. There are two other key sources that would be serving us extensively in the future, and these are copper plates. And as we continue, we will rely very heavily on these, and of course, the ubiquitous temple wall inscriptions. Next week, we will talk about the first real South Indian empire that emerges from the collapse of the Mauryan Empire. Of the many successor states that fought for power, come the Satavahanas, the Lord of the Seven Seas. But that is for next week. Vanakkam, and thank you for listening.